Thank you again for joining the Exploring the Social Networking APIs webcast. Now, without any further delay, I'd like to turn today's live meeting over to your first presenter, Andrew Duffy. Andrew, you now have the floor.
Great. Thanks very much. Just want to take a moment to say welcome, everyone. Good morning or good afternoon, depending on which time zone you're in. If you're joining us at lunchtime, please enjoy your lunch, sit back, and relax. We're going to have a great webcast here. I am joined today by two of my colleagues, Tara Walker and Lindsay Lindstrom. So we'll, between the three of us, be covering three different social networking APIs and how you can leverage those inside of a Windows Store app. So let's get started. All right. So my team, Lindsay, Tara, myself, and several other evangelists, have put together a series of starter kits that come under the heading of API MASH. And the vision behind API MASH was really to be able to create starter kits for Windows 8 and Windows Phone based on open data APIs. So we actually kind of went through and did a look through of a bunch of different open APIs, looked at things like how throttled they were, how useful they were in terms of either individual APIs or mashing up, and basically broke them out so that each starter kit is really kind of the kernel of the idea for an app. So the starter kits really serve a couple of different purposes. One of the purposes is to demonstrate how to call APIs from various technologies you can use to build a Windows Store app. And the other one is that they can actually be used as the starting point for actual apps. And how you're going to use that is really up to you. We've kind of left that to the individual user who downloads the starter kits. Any of these APIs can really be able to be kind of mashed up or called in different ways to create many different app ideas. So if you think of ideas that are beyond the scope of what our starter kits do, you can still leverage the starter kits as a point to kind of leap off and jump in and kind of customize and play with the data. Now, when we think about APIs, API means application programming interface. And if you think about kind of the history of APIs, it was usually the case up until fairly recently that APIs were really mostly about installable components that you would call from within your software programs. Today, APIs really are more often than not called on the web, and often through a protocol or a style of programming called REST, where you actually call via HTTP and receive data back. So we actually went through and looked at, as I said, some APIs that are free to use, that have reasonable throttling, if any throttling, and basically how many requests you can have per any given period of time, and make it easy to use the data that's returned. That it comes back as either XML or JSON data. If you want to see some examples of APIs, there's thousands of APIs available at apihub.com, and they are searchable. So you can kind of search through for APIs that might have the kinds of data that you're looking for your given app. Now, when we think about APIs, something, again, to consider is that some APIs have rate limiting. That is how many times you can call the service. So that's something to keep in mind when you're looking at an API as a candidate for how it delivers data to your app. The other thing is that sometimes APIs go down or have changes. When an API, has issues, that's a time when you might want to have caching in your APIs, for example. And actually, one of my colleagues, Stacy Mulcahy, did a Tumblr API mashup that's part of our starter kit collection, and actually demonstrates one of the possible techniques you could use to cache data locally so that if the API goes down, your app still works. Now, again, the starter kits, you can consider those sort of a starting point. They are built as Visual Studio 2012 projects for the Windows Store. Some of them are built in XAML and C#. Some are built in HTML5 and JavaScript. I'm actually going to be demonstrating one of the kits that I put together, which is based on HTML and JavaScript. Lindsay and Tara will both be talking to kits that leverage C# and XAML. So you'll get to see both examples in this webcast. These starter kits are completely customizable, and in fact, for each of the starter kits, we include a README that describes the steps for customization. So the goal here is that each kit will call one or more APIs, serialize or deserialize the data that's returned, and then expose that data via some kind of a bindable object or object model and binds that to the UI controls. So we'll see that in our sample code here shortly. Now, jumping into the Meetup API. So the Meetup API is the one that I took on for the starter kit. And the Meetup API is kind of cool. There's lots and lots of APIs that you can call to get information about specific Meetup groups, about events, about all kinds of stuff. So it's a fairly complex API to work with, but in the sense that the data that's returned from each of these APIs is not homogeneous. So you're not going to get the same data back if you call different APIs. But that being said, it's really easy to pick out one or two of the APIs from Meetup and make a useful app out of that. So in my case, I decided to call the Open Events API, which I'll talk about here in a minute. So kind of the flow for the HTML and JavaScript app that I built is, you know, when the client app starts up, one of the first things it's going to do is invoke the API. So it's going to call via an operation called winjs.xhr. It's going to call into the Open Events API on Meetup. That API returns a payload that's a JSON object, JSON being JavaScript object notation, a JSON object that gets returned back to the application. The XHR operation returns something called a promise, which allows me to do easy asynchronous programming without having to do a bunch of callbacks. And so once I get the JSON back, it gets parsed into a JavaScript array. Then we add all the items from that array into an object called the winjs.binding.list. And then that gets bound to a list view control, which displays the data for us. Now, again, I'm using the meetup.com API. I also, you'll also see I'm using the Bing Maps SDK to kind of do a little bit of a mashup with the data that I'm using. So the starter kit actually uses the Open Events API, which is going to retrieve all currently open events, that is, upcoming events that are open to the public. There's lots of other APIs that you can call. I started with this particular app based on the JavaScript grid app template. So what I wanted to do was take that grid app template, which is a standard part of Visual Studio, and do as little alteration to the grid app template itself in order to get the data loaded and looking good. So if you've used the grid app template before, you should be right at home with what that looks like, and it should be fairly easy to see where I've made the various changes. All right, so let's jump into a demo. So I'm going to share my desktop, and I'm going to open up Visual Studio. All right, so what I want to do first before anything else is I'm just going to run this app so you can kind of see what's going on here. So when I run this, I get my splash screen, which we've customized here with the API MASH logo. You can customize that for your own particular app. Now, I've set a breakpoint inside of this meetupdata.js. So this is a customization that I've made of the data.js that's included with that grid app template. And the idea here is the grid app template uses data.js to simply generate some sample code. Instead of the sample code, what I'm doing is going out to the Meetup API, and I'm calling the Open Events API, and I'm passing in the state, the page, the key, my Meetup key, the distance that I want to search on, and some other parameters to create this Meetup URL. And I'm getting all of this stuff from this common namespace, which if I drill into that, you can see it contains my keys, my properties for these various objects. So this common namespace is actually declared inside customizeme.js, which we'll take a look at here in a minute. So basically what I do is I'm parameterized all of these things that I need to pass into the Meetup URL, and then I pass that URL to winjs.xhr, tell it I want JSON data back. And then when that operation is done, I call an anonymous function where I get the meetups and I parse the response that I get back. And as I step through that code, what I'm going to do is for each of these items that's returned, I'm doing some grouping code. And we'll see the results of that here in a minute. I'm going to just run this again. And now what we can see is the result of the grouping code, if I show you on screen here, is less than 5 miles, 10 to 25 miles, you know, more than 25 miles, et cetera. And this is looking for meetups near Washington, D.C. using the keyword JavaScript. And you can customize this in your own version of the app. So I'm going to go ahead and close that. And I'm going to go over to our API MASH startup page. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to drill into the meetup starter kit that I created here. I want to show you here. Here's the README. So the README gives you a screenshot of the app, shows you the features, and then this section here I wanted to point out gives you the setup and customization so you know exactly which parameters you're able to customize, where to find the customization parameters, in this case in customizeme.js, and what all those mean. And so if I drill down further into my starter kit, down here into the JavaScript, and into customizeme.js, you can see that I've got placeholders for the meetup key, for the Bing Maps key, and for the city and state, and for the meetup keywords. So all of these are things that you can use to customize the app for your own specific purposes. I'm going to run that app one more time just to kind of show you a couple of other things that I've included here, and then I'll encourage you to drill into the code to look for some additional stuff here. So going back into the app, one of the things that I do here is, you know, let's say I want to find out about supercharging your JavaScript with TypeScript. I'm also leveraging the Bing Maps SDK for Windows Store apps to create a map and also to retrieve data from the Bing Maps search functionality so that I can find coffee shops near the meetup of my choice. So you could totally change this up to look for restaurants, to look for other things. I chose coffee because, well, I drink a lot of coffee. So that's a quick tour of the Bing Maps and Meetup API mashup. I'm going to turn things over now to Lindsay, who's going to take the next section. And take it away, Lindsay.
Great. Thanks, Andrew. I'm just going to go back to the slides. There we go. So come on back. Okay. Hello, everyone. My name is Lindsay Lindstrom. If live meeting lets me move. Okay. My name is Lindsay Lindstrom. I'm also on the same team as Andrew and Tara, based in the Mid-Atlantic near Philadelphia. And today I'd like to go over how to leverage some of Facebook's features in your Windows 8 app. So I'm going to do a little mashup for you. But in this case, unlike Andrew, I'm going to leverage a different starter kit that is based on XAML and C# rather than HTML5 and JavaScript. Okay, so first of all, like you saw with Andrew's diagram, we have a very similar process for the API MASH starter kits that are based on C# and XAML take advantage of. The four steps is that first, when you choose an API, whether it's, you know, Meetup or Chuck Norris is one of them, which you'll see later, or something else as a source of your data, you will invoke that API. And in this case, we're doing it asynchronously, taking advantage of in Windows with the async and await keywords to invoke that API. Once we talk to the API and get some data, we need to deserialize that data, that payload of data, into some into our data model. So we can do that by creating our own data model for that. And one thing that I honestly didn't know until these exercises is that you can take some JSON and paste it specially in Visual Studio as a class model, basically, or which is awesome. So you don't have to do all that typing out. So then once we have that data model, we can choose to create our own view model so that we combine in step three. So we combine to the UI. So step three is copying from our data model to a view model. So maybe you're not going to use all the types of data that you're going to get back from your JSON data. Maybe you only want a subset of that. So in your view model, you'll define what you want to see and what you want to display to the end user. especially, you know, some of the APIs that we're leveraging from Meetup, from Rotten Tomatoes, they might return a lot of data, and then we don't need them all in our app. And this is something that you can customize as you take the starter kits and build them to more your liking, as well as add your own custom implementation of it. Okay? So once we copy the data model to the view model, the next step is to bind to our UI, bind to our controls. So, you know, there's a whole lot to go with data binding, but there's some great articles out there on data binding if you just look at the Windows Developer Center, which is dev.windows.com. So you can bind to whole controls, properties of controls, et cetera. In this example, there's a specific architecture that we followed in the C# XAML starter kits. So you'll see this common across all the different starter kits with that based on that, those languages. But basically, you'll have a few files in there. You'll have a boilerplate template kind of that's denoting the layout and the UI that you can bind to control some basic things. We have a API mash lib project that is common across all of them, which is basically we reuse the same code in all of them to handle the invoking of the APIs, to handle authentication, handle the mapping, all that's done in the API mash lib. And then we have API mash underscore whatever your API name is lib, so Rotten Tomatoes, Chuck Norris, and that is specific to that API. So that's what's handling the, you know, creating the data model for us. Okay, so what I did for this example today is wanting to leverage the Facebook APIs. Now, the Facebook API is a little bit different than the other APIs that you're going to see. First of all, it's pretty, I don't know if volatile is the right word, but Facebook does a lot of iterating on their APIs to keep them new and fresh for their users, and so you must pay attention to that so there aren't any breaking changes. But like Andrew showed you with the Bing Maps plus Meetup, is he's getting some data from Meetup, and then he's using Bing Maps APIs to appropriately display them or to find coffee shops around the area, what have you. So what we're going to do in this example is take one of the existing starter kits, the Chuck Norris starter kit. That's why I said it enhances the Chuck Norris starter kit. And we're going to capture that data, which is a joke coming from the Chuck Norris API. And we're going to take that joke and post it to Facebook. So just like we do with starter kit, we're going to take, like Andrew took the data from Meetup and post it to Bing Maps, we're going to take the data from Chuck Norris and post it to Facebook. So what this is if you go to Facebook.com, and I'll show you this momentarily, you can see that they have a developer section. So we're going to use that as a reference. And then we have some great folks. It used to be C# SDK for Facebook. Now it's the Facebook SDK. There's a link up there, FacebookSDK.net, that have kind of created a bunch of tools for us to leverage. So let me show that to you. Switching out to my desktop here. The first thing I want to show you is this is the Facebook developer portal. Hopefully you should see it. So it's just developers.facebook.com, and you log in with your Facebook account. And you can set up, create new apps to leverage. And these apps, I probably shouldn't be showing you this, but I'll delete it. This is just for demo. Give you an app ID and an API key. And this is what you're going to need to leverage in your application. So I have one called Chuck Norris Quotes, app ID, and such. The other thing this gives you is a whole bunch of documentation on the Facebook APIs. So you can see we have a few different APIs here for us, the Graph API, Facebook Query Language, Dialogues, Chat, Ads even. The one that we're going to leverage today is the Graph API, but the Facebook SDK leverages a few of these, including Graph API and Open Graph. So FacebookSDK.net is a couple of guys from Microsoft and users of the community, too, have created this Facebook SDK for .NET, and they've even enhanced it. Instead of just the ASP.NET SDK, which was the original implementation, they've expanded it to Windows 8 and Windows Phone as well. So this, you know, when I started working on this, I didn't realize this was here, and I found it, and I was like, yes, this is awesome. It's done so much of the work for me. It's still, you know, it's a passion project, so the references are good, but I don't think, you know, they could be a bit more complete. They could be a lot more samples. They basically have one complete example, the Scrumptious tutorial, and then examples how to use each of the controls and some guides on how to do some common things. So to get the Facebook SDK for Windows from Visual Studio, you can download it from GitHub and then, you know, add it to your solution, add it to your project. But you can also use it, get it from NuGet within Visual Studio. So what I have here, and I'm going to run that for you, is the Chuck Norris starter kit without any changes. I downloaded that. And then what I did is I've just added some features. So I just want to show you the functionality before we walk through it. First of all, I have a login button, and this is the Facebook login control that came from the SDK. So I'm going to click on login, and it's going to ask me, it does the authentication piece for me. I didn't have to code this up. That's what the login control does. So, of course, you can create your own button and, you know, use the Facebook SDK to handle the login for you instead of just using the control feed or restyle the control, what have you. Once I log in, you see a few things pop up on my screen. I have a text box with my jokes in it. I have a welcome with my name on it that I'm getting from Facebook because I've logged in as that user. And I have a list of a friend picker. This is also another control that is available to us where I can choose friends. And then I have a couple of buttons here, post to Facebook and a new joke, so I can get a new joke. So as you can tell, this is actually the Chuck Norris API using GitNet, but the Chuck Norris API allows us to pass in a first name and last name so he can get a joke, custom joke. So depending on who I choose, when my selection is changed, I'm going to get new quotes. So I'm going to choose somebody, and I'll choose my husband just so I don't get in too much trouble. Or I could choose Tara or Andrew, if I can remember my husband's name. That's going to do this so many times. Sorry, this is where you fix your code. Right now I have every time there's a selection changes, I get a new joke. So John Lindstrom can speak Braille. I'm going to post that to Facebook. And this is just part of the tutorials. I'm just saying, give me myself a message box that it posted and gives the ID of the post. So now I'll close that out and stop debugging. And I can show you on Facebook just to prove out John Lindstrom can speak Braille. So there you go. All right, so that's just a quick demo of how that app works. Let's walk through it. So first of all, on my page I have, and great, on design time, now it doesn't want to show up. So there we go. Okay. I have a Facebook login button, and we can see that in the XAML. I've got to clean this UI up. I'm a developer, not a UI person. And you can see that I have a Facebook control login button and a Facebook control friend picker that I got from Facebook SDK, which you can see in my references. Okay, so let's take a look first at the first text block, which shows you my name. Notice I'm doing binding in this case to the current user property, current user name property of the login button, and that's something else the login button gets us. Then in our login button, I notice I don't have a click event, but that's where I pass in my application ID, and that also handles the session changed this hasn't changed event if I've logged in or if I'm logged out. Then we have a stack panel below for some organization, a text box with a joke, and the friend picker control, which also has some ability to change selection mode. Can I select more than one person? It has an access token so that it knows what this app and this friend picker has access to on Facebook. So, you know, it's based on the login button. So if I've logged in, then I have access to all my friend list. If I haven't logged in, then I don't have access to get to that friend picker. I'm changing display order to first name, last name. And it's also leveraging the selection change event. So every time selection changes, I get a new joke for that friend. So that's pretty much the simplest UI. Let's take a look at the code behind. First of all, scrolling up here, this code, again, I didn't change any of the code coming from the Chuck Norris starter kit except for one piece, and that is to append a name string to the API call. So we can see that lower here. So the API call, I appended the name to it so I can add my friend's first name and last name. The session state changed is basically when I log into Facebook. If the session state is open, so the session is open, I'm logged in, then I'm changing the visibility of those posts to Facebook and get a new joke buttons. Then I am, if I post to Facebook, I have to, and this is all documented in Facebook API, is request the permission from the user to do so. So, publish actions, publish stream is already kind of built in, but if your app requires more permissions than just logging in gets you, it will automatically, because it's based on the login button, prompt the user to give their permission to do another action. All right. And then I am going to use the post task async, which allows me to pass in a path, the default path to the API, appended with my feed, me feed. Here is basically your user ID to the feed. I'm going to pass it some parameter. And this parameter allows you to kind of pass a title, some pictures, what have you. You can take a look at that on the Facebook API documentation. But I'm just passing a straight message, as we saw on Facebook, with the text property of my joke text block. And then this is where we say I posted my action, and there's the ID to that specific action. Now, the two things I wanted to point out to you of this is I'm leveraging Facebook from two places. The controls that are part of Facebook.client from the Facebook SDK, as well as the Facebook SDK API itself. So here we go with the login button you've seen, and then with the friend picker, I'm leveraging getting that pieces of data. But also, we saw it from the data binding on the top here that we're leveraging the login button as well. But then we see from our post action that we're also leveraging the Facebook client itself and not just the actual control. Okay, so it's a pretty straightforward process. You can do so much more. This is only leveraging the Graph API. Again, you can leverage the Graph, Open Graph APIs, the dialogue, chat, all that good stuff. But right now, this is the simplest kind of app you can do. That's leveraging the Graph API. So hopefully you can see that it's somewhat easy. This will be posted on the starter kits soon as I fix up the UI. And so with that, I'm going to hand it back over to Tara, and she's going to walk through the Twitter API.
Thank you, Lindsay. So, hi, I am Tara Walker. I am also on the team with Lindsay and Andrew, and I will be talking about the Twitter API. And what I did with the Twitter API is simply follow the very same model that you saw Lindsay follow with a few caveats. And so I'm going to introduce those caveats today, one being I follow the MVVM commanding model. And we'll talk about what that is and how that changes just slightly what you would do in creating a mashup or a Twitter starter kit based upon MVVM. So if you're looking at my slide, the first challenge that I had in creating the Twitter API was that Twitter decided as of May to require all of their calls to their API to be OAuth calls. So that being the case, that means you have to now adhere to strict OAuth to get any information or any data back from the Twitter API. And so that being the case, the first part of my code is going to be about getting an access token, and I'm going to walk you through that process in a minute. The second consideration in building a Twitter API that I had to go through was the fact that now that I have been authenticated against Twitter, I wanted to make my UI and my view model and my data so disparate that I could now repurpose this for other things. And I'll show you that with what I did between the two projects that I created. And so my choice in doing that is that I wanted to do a commanding model for MVVM. For those of you all that are not familiar with MVVM, MVVM stands for Model View View Model. And it is very similar to the MVC model, the Model View Controller. The only difference is that we get to leverage the power of binding in XAML and really making your UI only talk to your view model. So there's very little event-driven code in the UI. It's a very lean UI, and it leverages commanding and binding to really say, hey, this is why I want to navigate. So in my model, in creating the Twitter API, the first thing that I thought about is what data did I want to get back? What data was available to me, to Twitter, and there's tons of data. The ones that I chose to really bring you back, and again, you can expand upon this toolkit, and I would recommend that you do, is user. So I have a user class, a user model, tweets, and tweets can be from various users based upon their screen name, and trends. So you know you can see what's trending currently in Twitter, and I am pulling what's trending worldwide. So those were the models that I decided to look at when I wrote the model for the Twitter data objects. For the view model, again, I used a commanding model. So this is where the meat of my application lies. I have function calls that are directly tied to the model, and I also have commands that are inheriting from a custom command relay object that I created. Now, I want to talk about this for a minute just so you can understand what, you know, a command relay model is and what your avenues for it. If you're familiar with MVVM, you probably are familiar with some of the third-party libraries that are out there. There is MVVM Lite. There's just a ton. If you're doing cross-platform, there's MVVM Cross. There are tons of MVVM platform, the object models out there, or libraries, for lack of a better term, that you can use. So what I wanted to do in this starter kit was not to depend on those third-party tools that we had to, you know, you typically would see, that I could make this very clean and very seamless so that you then, as the developer using the starter kit, could make your own design decisions about what pattern or library you wanted to emulate. So what you'll find in this starter kit is there is a custom relay object that I created. Very simple. It's going to look very much like what you saw when MVVM first came out, what you would see in Prism, what you would see in MVVM Lite. Very lightweight command relay object, and it is inheriting from the iCommand interface. From that point, each command relay object, I literally just create a function that is based upon that command relay object, obviously inherits from it, and that each of those commands tied to the REST Twitter APIs that I have in my Twitter API class. And so what I use then, I take those command relay functions and I can bind that directly into my XAML. And so I don't have to put any code in the code behind that says, okay, when this button is clicked, do this and write that code behind. The binding is already taking care of that for me. And so when you click the button in Twitter, and I'll show you all of this in a second, it actually then calls the view model, and then that command gets executed. Very similarly, if you had put the code into your click event. So in the UI, you'll see it's a very much a binding-driven model. There's no event-driven code in the UI. All codes are driven by this commanding model. And what you will see in the code in the UI will simply be just the fact that I'm tying to my view model and saying this page, and therefore, you know, this page uses the data object or the view model as its data resource. And so let's get into the code. Enough talking. All right, great. So hopefully you can see my screen right now. All right, so let's look at Visual Studio. All right, so the first thing, as Lindsay pointed out, is always the biggest challenge, is the UI. So I actually created two UIs for this webcast. One was the quick and dirty UI that is very interesting, I'll say, to say the least. And the other one is actually the real UI. So let me show you the app running, and then I'll go through some of the steps. The first thing when I start up and run the app, you'll see it comes up, and this is the pretty version of the app I created actually from the starter kit last night. You'll see it comes up. It has the blue. If I right-click, and you can actually persist this API, you can see the API app bars, and it has all the criteria and everything else. Now, when I decide to click on any of these, I am going to first be asked to authenticate with Twitter. There is really no way to do this at this point, the way Twitter Exchange or APIs, but to authenticate at the Twitter level. And so what I did to keep you inside the app versus doing what Twitter kind of asks you to do now with the V11, as far as go out and paste something in a callback at a website and all that other stuff, just not a good experience. I used and leveraged a great resource in Windows 8 called the Web Authentication Result. And what that allows you then to do is treat, you know, your service just like you would get if you wanted to use your camera. It asked you for a security authorization. You said yes, and you were able to continue. So let's do that so you can see that part. So you'll see I have a object here that's verify the authenticated user. So if you have done this the first time, you don't have to do it again. If you have not, I'm just going to step through that part. It actually is going to call a function. If you notice, I'm in my view model. When I click that, no event code was triggered in my UI. It is going to call a method called authenticate Twitter user. So I'm going to take this breakpoint out so I can show you what will happen when you do that. You'll see it says it is going to a service. And what I did was is make the web authentication piece that typically would exist here as a service. This is not a web browser you're seeing. This actually is a service that Twitter is using or calling from Twitter to be able to get the data once you authenticate back. Now, you'll see a little button here on the side that says when a tweet API. It asks you for a website and where it says don't have one and building Twitter off and need app key. The first thing you're going to have to do if you want to use this starter kit, because right now it is tied to a account that I created, the first thing you're going to want to do is go to dev.twitter.com and create an application that you're going to use for this. You're going to name the application. You're going to get it a password, put in the necessary information. And this is what you're going to use then to go forward with the Twitter API or using the starter kit. So I created one that's called When a Tweet API. You can leverage this one because it is truly a dummy account or application that's being used, and I'm purposely using it just for API calls. Now, what you want to do at this point is if you're going to authorize this or if a user is going to authorize this application for their use in Twitter, they need to give Twitter authorization based upon their account. Now, what I did was also go out and create a quote-unquote real Twitter account with the same name. Now, mind you, it has a different password, but just to keep it consistent, so I am going to authenticate with that dummy Twitter account that I created that ties to the application. You absolutely do not have to do this. You can log in with whatever Twitter account you currently have. I wanted to do this for demonstration purposes so you could see, one, me logging into this dummy account, and it could be anyone, and also me searching for myself and getting tweets back. So you'll see this dummy account win a tweet API. I'm going to put in the password for it, and you'll see a button here that says authorize the app. And I'm going to go ahead and do that. So it said, okay, well, you're authorized. These are the tweets, and these are just some dummy tweets that I created on that Twitter tweets with a tweet API. So you'll see them here. This is just using a grid view. This is absolutely customizable. You can make it look any way you want to look. The picture you see coming back is the picture that is represented for the Win8 Tweet API for that Twitter account. So to also see this, you know, working as far as how it would work if I was doing it by user. Now, at this point, you've authenticated. There's no need for you ever to do that again. And what I'm doing to make sure that happens is once you authenticate and I've gotten back the various tokens that are required to go against Twitter, I actually save that down to a local storage repository that Win8 allows you to have so that when you do this again, you do not have to go through the authentication process that you see. And any time I click home, it knows that I, Win8 Tweet API, who have authorized this application, that's I'm the user, and so it will show me my tweets on my timeline. Let's say if I wanted to then get the tweets by my real Twitter account, which is Tara W., I then can enter the search criteria. So it says enter user or search criteria because you can also search by topic, and you see that noted here. And then I could click get tweets by user. So I'm going to do that now using my own. And so once I do that, you'll see that it actually now comes up with me. These are my actual tweets from Twitter. That's my actual picture from Twitter. This is where I get to pick on my coworkers because now I am actually going to put in Lindsay's name. Lindsay, I really hope you haven't said anything that's inappropriate because now the world is about to see it.
I hope not.
Lindsay in Philly, here we go. Let's see what Lindsay has been talking about on Twitter. That is Lindsay. She's talking about eating salad, obviously. So this is Lindsay.
The lyrics.
But this is Lindsay on Twitter. And, again, these are her real tweets. Now, let's go into the code because it's a few things I need to tell you about this. First off, I am getting back the 50 latest tweets that she has done. You can absolutely get back as many as 2,000 tweets. It's just a matter of setting the API count that I have in the API starter kit. I set it to do 50. You can absolutely set it to be up to 2,000. Know that the application, after a certain period of time, will become throttled if you make more than 50 calls within a certain period of time. And it's a small period of time, so more often than not, you're not going to make 50 calls within this short window of time, but you need to be mindful of that, about the throttling. And if you look at, if you're using the JS, obviously, Andrew talked about a great way that Stacy did the throttling. You also can look at what, if you have Azure Mobile Service access, what another one of our coworkers did to prevent throttling in his application was use Azure Mobile Services. So you have a lot of avenues to do these things. And lucky for you, again, these starter kits provide you with that point to start and to kind of match up where you want to go. So let's get into the code. All right. So the first thing I noted to you was that I wasn't putting anything in the UI. There are pretty much nothing in the UI, and I actually customized my page to start up with Twitter homepage versus main page. I purposely kept it there so you could see that you can start your Windows 8 application anywhere you want to, and obviously if you've done any search settings, you know that as well. You can activate, and that's just a change in the app XAML. You're going to need a key for Twitter, a consumer key, and a consumer secret. When you go into Twitter and register that new application, it will give you a consumer secret and a consumer key. You're going to need to put that consumer key and that consumer secret in the app XAML of this starter kit to get it to work. I do all of the, in the code of the Twitter OAuth, all the navigation back and forth to get the request tokens, the access tokens, the verifier tokens. There's a lot of tokens in OAuth you have to get to make sure that you can call these. And that is done behind the scenes. But what is required is you have to get that consumer key and that consumer secret from the application to function. After you do that, what I've done is, again, it's a separate library, and so you can just pull this library out. You'll notice that API Twitter, API Lib is the library, very similar to the focus or the structure that Lizzie talked about. And my UI project is the API Twitter, oh gosh, API Mesh Twitter API Starter Kit. So again, I am referencing my library in the Starter Kit. So let's first look at the UI. So the first thing you'll see in the UI here, I'll go to the XAML, is that I have a grid. It has a data template. That is where I am binding to my objects. And so I'm binding to an object that you'll see in the view model called tweet image. I'm binding to your screen name, and I'm binding to the tweet text, and that's what my grid is pulling back and binding to. The other thing you'll see in here as I go up, I have my app bars, and that's the bar you saw at the bottom. And you can make this sticky so it's always up there if you don't want to have them, you know, come up to a blank screen. This is totally up to you. This is why it's a starter kit. But I have some various functions there. And you'll see I have the search item text, and that's where the text box lives, where you can type in either a Twitter name or a search topic. You'll see I have the user tweet lookup buttons, et cetera, your home button, and the like. What you should notice here, though, because I'm using the commanding model, is that you don't see a click event. What I did, again, in using the MVVM commanding model is I bind this button to an object in my view model that is inheriting from that command relay custom object I talked about. And I bind it per the tweet API I've created, which ones I want to call. So for the home timeline that I showed you where the tweet, the Win8 tweet API, I bind to a command relay object that I've created called get tweets by home timeline. For the user lookup that I just showed you that I did, I bind to get user tweets by user. And I'm actually sending a parameter of what type of authentication you want to do. Twitter allows for you to do OAuth, which is the example I just showed you, but it also allows you to do bearer tokens, which means I'm using this application, I will not need to get people's personal information, their info. I'm going to just do things maybe like searching or trending topics. And so you don't need as much access if you don't want to get into the users as you would if you do. So I give the option to do both in my Twitter API. And so I'm passing a parameter to say, okay, what type of authentication is this going to do? And it's just an enumeration, and it's just one or two, two being OAuth, and one being simply that I'm going to do a bearer token. And so I'm actually binding right now to that as a parameter. So you can change that in your view model, or you can allow for the users to put it in their app XAML and go in the like. Okay, so that's the UI. Nothing special about that. I'll just show you the CS. When I have my load state, so I'm using a layout aware page for this, just the typical layout aware basic page if you add it, I have then tying to my view model, and that's all I'm doing. I'm going to take two more minutes, so we'll have time for Q&A, and just show you finally the library. So this is being referenced. That was the UI. You'll see I have the model, and the model is just what I told you about. It is tweet. It's one of the classes. I have my private variables, nothing special about that. I have my public fields that are properties. They're inheriting from bindable base, so anytime the property changed, it gets notified, and I can update here, and this is how I'm doing my binding. Oops. Machine's flipping over on me. Sorry. So, again, you can see that, you know, again, this is not really anything special. It is just simply a model of tweets. And I have tweet, user, and trends, and you'll see I have those as well. I also have some helper methods there. And Lindsay mentioned about the paste as JSON. I use that all the time. It's one of my favorite things. And so what I did was when I'm getting the raw data back, I use some helper methods, and then I can manipulate the data to then send you back the objects already formatted the way I want. And that's how you get the tweet, the trend, and the user object. So I'm using some helper classes from the paste as JSON that I use there. If you look at my view model, then the first thing I showed you with that breakpoint is I'm verifying that you're authenticated or not. If you have already gone through what I showed you with the service, there is no need for me to put you through that again. So I literally check to see if you're authenticated. I send back a Boolean that says, yes, you are. If you are, then there's no need to then authenticate you. And so I go ahead and then call my Tweet API. And again, if you notice, this says get homeline tweets. Well, that's not what I was bound to. So let me show you where the actual commandings are. So you'll see I have a parameter called private iCommand get tweets by screen name. So again, I've defined that as a private. But if you look down here, go to page not moving. These are my public command relay methods. And so you see what I tied to was, it's again, just a property that is of type iCommand. You'll see it's get user tweets by user. So it is tied to that private command. And I said, okay, that command relay will go to a function that's called get user tweets. It does the same thing with trends. It does the same thing with the home timeline, which I had a breakpoint there to try to show you, but we're running a little bit behind schedule. So that is simply all I have, and I'm passing in that parameter that's bound to it as Twitter type because that is also a public property that I'm binding to, no more, no less. So there's no code in my UI. I have, again, this command relay object, and that's what these are defined as, and so I can say, hey, I am going to do this by defining some private variables as iCommand interface, and these are the objects that I'm going to send to. Once it does that, then it just simply calls those objects that I've denoted to be the right ones. So I have a function called get home timeline tweets, and that's where you see it'll do the verification and, again, call the Twitter API. So with that, we have about five minutes left. This is available on the GitHub, the starter kits. I'm actually going to upload the pretty version. This is the pretty version. I won't show you the horrible one. So let me go back to the slides. All right. Hopefully you are seeing the slides now. And that was my demo. We are open for any questions. Okay. If you have any questions, please feel free to post them in the Q&A window. We do have our other coworker who is monitoring that and can answer any questions for you. But let me talk about what you can do with these starter kits, and that's the great thing about this. We still have the Keep the Cash promotion running. So you can definitely go to other workshops, check with your local evangelist. I am in the greater Southeast, so that's Atlanta, Mississippi, Alabama, South Carolina, along with my coworker Diego. So we cover the greater Southeast. Lindsay and Andrew cover the Mid-Atlantic, and we have evangelists all over the East region that can help you. So definitely check with your local evangelist, check with our blogs to see what other workshops are going on around API MASH. We have office hours. If you go to ohours.org, you will see a DPE evangelism group that has all the evangelists in the U.S. And these office hours are slots where if you need help with your code on a one-on-one basis, we actually schedule those to actually get in kind of in the weeds with you to help you to solve whatever problem you need or getting started or just to get that first app in the store. So we're here to help. And then the Keep the Cash, the fun promotion. Up until June 30th, for every app that you get into the Windows Store and you register at the link you see, the AKA MS Keep the Cash, you can win $100 per app. And that's $100 per app that you put in the Windows Store, up to 1,000, and then $100 per app to every app that you put in the Windows Phone Store, up to another 1,000. So you could literally maximize this and get a nice, cool $2,000 to enjoy your summer with. And that is through June 30th. So enjoy coding and get some rewards for it. The next series that we have coming up is Exploring the Yelp API. This webcast, as well as the initial webcast, Exploring the Mastery APIs, are available and recorded on Channel 9. So you see the link in the presentation here. And again, this presentation is available for handouts. If you don't have a chance to jot it down, don't worry. You can get the handouts. But again, these are being recorded. So if you miss something, you absolutely can go back and see them there. We have the other two webcasts coming up, June 19th and June 25th. All the webcasts run from 12 to 1 Eastern Standard Time, and that would be 9 then Pacific Standard Time. The link to access all of those are the AKA MS App Mash Online, and that will provide you with the registration links for all of these webcasts. Now, let me end with giving you some great resources. We have App Builder. We have the API Mass Starter Kit that we've been talking about today. But if you really need help with UI, and quite frankly, as a developer, that is my biggest challenge, we actually have a design center for you, and that is located at design.windows.com. We have the Developer Center, which will have samples, examples, quick starts of everything pretty much we showed you here, as well as a ton of other things that you can do in building your Windows 8 app. And then that same model is shared with the Windows Phone Developer Center. So register, submit your apps, get some cool cash, we'll keep the cash. And with that, Mike, I hand it back to you.
Thank you very much. I'd like to extend a big thank you to the presenters and a big thank you to the attendees for joining today. And with that, this concludes today's presentation. Thank you again for joining.